The sun shall never set on so glorious a human achievement. Let freedom reign. God bless Africa.
I am an African. I owe my being to the hills and the valleys, the mountains and the glades, the rivers, the deserts, the trees, the flowers, the seas, and the ever-changing seasons that define the face of our native land.
There is a place for all South Africans, black and white. It is a partnership.
This is now the time where we should honor the memory of Nelson Mandela to build a new, better South Africa for all our people. Now is the time.
My name is Thabo Tshabalala. I turned 30 in 2024, and on the 27th of April, it will be 30 years since the dawn of democracy. Has our country benefited from this democracy over the last 30 years? Join me as I speak to South Africans of all stripes, from the most powerful to the everyday average citizens. This is a Times Live original podcast, 30 Years of Democracy. Welcome to another episode of the 30 Years of Democracy podcast. And today I am joined by Ifran Mangira, who is part of Rise Mzansi. Ifran, thank you so much for joining us. It's after so many postponements. Finally, we have you here. How are you, man?
Thank you, firstly, for having me. Yeah. I'm good. I'm excited now that the election date has been announced.
29 May.
It's getting closer and closer.
Yeah.
I'm a bit anxious, but also excited to see what change we can collectively bring to this new phase of our democracy. Mm.
And your position at Rise Mzansi?
I'm part of the National Leadership Collective.
Okay. That is, for those who are like still confused, that's like the NEC, right?
Yes. Of Rise.
Basically, that's the National Executive Committee, the top structure or the top leadership, as some politicians would say.
Yeah, the highest decision maker.
The highest decision making body of Rise Mzansi. So, just to start off this episode, just tell me a bit about your childhood, where you grew up. And first of all, this podcast is important to tell us your age, you know, since we are celebrating 30 years. Because in the beginning of the podcast, I say I'm 30. Mm. So age is something that needs to be revealed in this podcast.
No, I'd be happy to, because I think being a democracy baby, I'm 27 years old. I'm going to be 28 later this year.
Mm-hmm.
I come from Lenasia.
Mm,
I'm a Joburg boy, born and raised. In the past, I've said the dusty streets of Lenasia. It's contrary to some of...
Is it dusty there?
It's dusty. It was a dust bowl before it was created.
Oh, okay.
And I start by saying that I am from the Mangeras of 14th Street Fitas, which was a Group Areas Act area that was... or rather, it was an area that was demolished or... people there forcibly removed to go and stay in Lenasia. And that became Lenasia over time because people were forced to live there. It was an empty land. There was an army base and a farm.
Mm.
And so I come from those streets.
And where were those people moved from? Or they moved from?
Fitas. Fitas is a place called, the other name is Frederdorp. It's based not too far from here, on the other side of Braamfontein. As you move towards Fordsburg and Mayfair.
Oh, okay.
So my journey as a young person growing up in Lens had always had this reflection because there's a legacy of apartheid that couldn't be ignored.
Mm.
And I think it was most prevalent when I had to go to university and had to catch the bus at 5:30, 6 a.m. every day just so that I could be at Wits on time for the first class at 8. And that reminder of spatial injustice continues for many of us.
Mm.
So I relate that story because young people today, I think, need to engage history in that fashion, that in as much as that history has passed us, we have to undo the legacy that remains, that keeps us in the condition we live in.
And growing up, when did you realize, I mean, I hear you say, you know, those spatial occupations still affect you till this day, that legacy of apartheid. When did you realize that this country comes from, when were you told about that, you know, you guys come from this area and you were moved as part of the spatial planning of the then apartheid government?
You know, we grow up in a big family. I come from a very big family. And oftentimes you'd have visitors from all sorts of towns who come, who used to come to my house. And because we sort of had this welcoming culture in my family, my grandparents would often, every week that we were there, after school some days or on the weekends, you'd find visitors from other parts of the country. And you often ask why. And part of that discussion was that, you know, my grandfather's shop, Infitas, was a regular space in which a lot of these people visited, either bought stuff or traded. And till, you know, they passed, the relationships continued. And I didn't understand any of those relations until I grew up. Until my parents would tell me stories of how they would travel for school, catching trains from Forsberg to Lens. And those stories helped me realize that there was a legacy that I was carrying. And often it wasn't told from the lens of pain or sorrow or anger, because for them it was just a lived experience. However, as I grew up, I'd probe and you'd find that there is a deeper pain and a trauma that hasn't been acknowledged and dealt with.
And so where does the activism start for you? When did it make you want to get involved? Because as a young person, you know what they say about us young people, we don't care about the politics, we don't care about... When did it hit you that I need to get involved in activism?
So I also want to say that part of the realization of that past was that Joburg South is one of the poorest regions, if not the poorest in the city. Everywhere around Lanesia today you find informal settlements, and they're growing, and they continue to grow yearly because people have migrated to the city due to urbanization and other...
A lot of violence in those informal settlements.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. Violence, but also you have annually, you have fires, you have lots of dangerous conditions that exist, and it just becomes... It becomes hard to ignore. And so... Growing up and, in fact, passing daily an informal settlement going to school meant that I had to take cognizance of what was happening. And that helped me a lot. It helped me in, firstly, taking a step to become a volunteer at my cricket club. Okay. So when you speak of activism, the initial stages were from school, where my teacher said, you know, go and volunteer at humanitarian aid organizations. And that was amazing because we could, you know, provide food for those who don't have.
Sorry to interject, was this primary, high school?
Both. But it started in primary. And till today, I love going to visit the school because it brings back memories of teachers who said, you have a role to play in society.
And that's the importance of sports, right?
Absolutely.
Sports teaches you discipline. It teaches you how to communicate, how to deal with different people.
Yes.
You know, just highlight the importance of that for a young person who's listening, thinking that they're just playing sports because of the athletics in it, because of, you know, the drive in it, but they don't realize the importance of sports.
I mean, we see it today with the rugby and the Bafana Bafana winning. It changes the mood of an entire country. Sport for me at the time, And during high school specifically, was when I started getting young people to play cricket. And under Crescent's Cricket Club, it was a massive cricket club in its heyday. I managed to pull together 5 to 6 cricket teams of young people. Majority, I'd say 90% were young youth. And that was a deliberate attempt to say sports has the power to get people active and engaged. But also, you're taking young people away from the social ills that exist and the opportunities that come about with sports. That type of life. So sports gives you the recreational activity, the physical well-being, but you also create conditions that people are focused, people get discipline mm. around doing something healthy for themselves mm. instead mm. of everything else we see happening.
And going into high school varsity, how now were you entrenched in this activism? Like, how deep was it? You know, because we're going to go into that Admit Katrada Foundation. But before that, like, when did it actually get deep to say, after school, I want to continue with this? Because mm. most people leave what they used to do in high school and leave it in the past and don't take it into the future.
Yeah. People always ask, you know, where it began. And I'd say the spirit of volunteerism in this country is a powerful thing. It transforms families and communities like you can't believe.
Mm.
And so being encouraged to be a volunteer, I'd say, was the beginning of that journey. And when it took a serious step was when I moved away from the charity work and the administrative work mm. and the coaching work and said, I want to play a role and in society beyond mm. just doing that. Mm. I want to fix this, the problems that it make this, all the other things exist.
Exist, yeah.
And that was a deliberate attempt to study teaching because I said, I working with youth, I can at least yeah. impact. Like the generational change. That was matric and mm. having these thoughts. The Katrada Foundation Youth Leadership Program at the time, it was an annual program mm. and I had joined it. And Matt Katrada, Matt Lalu Isochiba, mm. who are veterans of the struggle. And being in that space forced me to reckon with the more deeper systemic mm. issues of racism, mm. Of exclusion, and so on.
Mm.
And it was powerful because unlike most of young people in this country, as a cohort, we got to, number one, meet them,
mm.
but also get them taking us to places like Lily's Leaf Farm,
mm.
Robben Island, Apartheid yeah. Museum. Places that remind us of our history, but also that forces us to reckon with the remaining journey of what they had started.
Mm.
And that really forced me to reckon with what I want out of life. Mm. And FISMAS Fall happens 2015, my first
So wait, year. Which university did you go to?
I was a VIT. I was a VIT.
I would call it the main, for me, the main driver of FISMAS Fall here in Gauteng was, you know, University of the Witwatersrand. And how was that experience?
It was the life-changing moment.
Sure.
And I'd say, politically speaking, it helped me realize that there's no one coming to save us.
Mm-hmm.
Young people had to stand for something bigger than ourselves or mm-hmm. our respective organizations.
Mm-hmm.
I was a first year. I didn't understand wow. politics the way...
Did you understand the cause of why this was happening? Or is it one of those... Let me just join for the sake of joining because it's... We call it because it's fashion.
So that's a good... origin story because I got off the bus one day and this was like at 7-ish because obviously we travel early with the bus from Lens. And I said, I'm hearing that there's a group of students blocking the entrance. I didn't understand it at the time. I walked down and to Empire Road entrance and lo and behold, there's a group doing the blocking of the entrances and chanting and so on. And then it was the first time I encountered people like Shaira Kala and that collective who were leading.
Hassan and all of those leaders.
So yeah. all those leaders. And I had no idea. I'm a first year. I don't know them. They don't know me.
Mm-hmm.
I say, look, I hear what you're saying. I'm interested to listen. In like a matter of minutes after some conversation, I get sent with another bunch of mm-hmm. students to go and block the then Senate
House. You are there joining.
And I joined. I was like, okay. What must happen now? And I joined. And it yeah. was, I think, it's a memorable month for me mm-hmm. because it really was the point of departure from just being a volunteer to saying young people need to lead the change we want to see
mm-hmm.
and must be willing to work across the divisions we have to say there's a bigger mm-hmm. cause that it lies ahead mm-hmm. of us.
And, you know, there's so many people speaking about Fees Must Fall till this day. But I always ask myself, the leaders that were leading Fees Must Fall, what change have they made right now? Or are they just mainly just now part of, we're seeing a lot of them now part of political parties. And literally, they've become politicians. And I feel as though most of the leaders, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, who are part of that movement, have now kind of forgotten the real cause of why that happened, you know, back in 2015, 2016. Mm. How do you feel about, I mean, you're one of them, I would say one. How do you feel about the leaders of back then? Where are they now, you know?
I wouldn't call myself a leader of the time. But I think you're right in saying they have gone on into politics.
Mm.
I think we need more young people in politics in general.
Mm.
And them going into the established parties is not necessarily a bad thing.
Yes.
I think their challenge is that you go into these existing parties that have a particular culture and you end up assimilating to that culture. It's the establishment. It's not going to shift unless you actually force it to.
It doesn't happen now.
And so I've engaged many of them, and I still do. You speak of Fasia, Nompendulo. I know Vuyani Pambo and them also went into the EFF. So they are doing good work to represent youth in their respective organizations. But I think fundamentally young people are still feeling that politics doesn't represent them, which is why at least 13 to 14 million young people are still not registered to vote, and because they don't think that the system is geared up to change life for them. So I respect the decision to go and serve.
Mm-hmm.
I just think being part of the establishment means that they have to conform in many ways.
Do you think more of like, not suppressed, but like, you know, they can't really make a change because they don't have the powers to?
I think they can make a change.
Mm.
If you follow the work of Nompendulo in constituency work,
yes,
she's probably the only MP I can say who makes constituency work what it should look like.
I hardly see in the National Assembly. I really do. I hardly see, you know, her, you know, standing up, you know, maybe raising a point of order. I even forgot that Nompendulo is part of the National Assembly. You know what I mean?
No, but I think that's them, and that's why I could not ever see myself go into, or at least being part of the PRA at my time at Wits was short-lived, because I already saw the institutional culture of the organization. Even being a convener of the ANC Youth League in my ward was a showcase to me that this organization has lost its purpose.
Mm.
It's more of...
It's even infiltrated into student politics too.
Of course. Mm. Right through. And that's why I'm saying you're not going to renew an organization that has culturally become an organization about self-interest, my turn to eat. And it cuts across even the young people. Mm. So those new entrants into it have to actually grapple with this reality. And I don't think there's an honest conversation about that kind of behavior and attitude that exists. That's why I left, and that's why I decided to work within the youth space to develop a new generation of activists who are really community driven.
So your time at the ANC Youth League, after that, I guess, what did you do before? I mean, RISE only started, if I'm not mistaken, in 2022?
Last year,
so 2023, sorry, ma'am. And what did you do after your time at the ANC Youth League, now going into second year, third year, finishing varsity?
It was a very short stint, and I say this because there's not enough time to speak about a story from there.
Trust me, there is. If you can summarize it.
it was primarily driven by this idea of our turn to eat, and I said, we cannot go down that route. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be involved in corruption. But where I was focused on...
Even on a student level.
That was a youth league at my ward.
But it's just shocking that even ANC Youth League in a ward still... wants to eat.
Yeah, but that's the culture. It was never about service to communities.
Sure.
Thankfully, I was tutored and mentored and given guidance by those who've served in the struggle, who said, in order for us to change this country, we need leaders and activists who are going to develop a giving culture, a culture of my service to the nation should be a day-to-day active citizenry. And so I finished my degree, my B.Ed. I'm qualified as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I did my honors as in education at Wits as well, in leadership and policy. And I was approached by the Kathrada Foundation, who was also at the time looking at how do they make youth activism work much more impact with much more impact. And they changed away from that cohort-based one that I was an initial participant of to a community-based, mass-mobilized and organized grouping. And I joined as a training officer at first and eventually was managing the program for the 4 years that I was there. In the 4 years, we reached youth across the country, but had a specific focus in Gauteng to get activism back into communities, where young people realize that there's power in their hands to do something. If you see a wrong, what do we do to change it? And by the time I had left, we had 32 youth clubs all across the country. And all over Gauteng. And in that period as well, had built the National Youth Coalition, which is a coalition of NGOs and civic movements that said, we want to actually drive a national campaign to get young people active. But not disconnected, yet use this platform to bring youth together who are saying this country is not going in the direction we want. So that's where my time went. And it was hard work because we had a lot of challenges, you know, with different types of individuals. Often in the space, you navigate egos, you navigate those interests as well that people have for their own.
Some people want to still eat. The problem with eating in this country.
No, and that's reality. People are hungry. That's the reality.
It's the cause of the past administration that has led us here to people wanting to eat. I guess we learn from the best. And then comes Rise Mzansi. How did that come about? Because you guys are everywhere, bro. You guys are everywhere. Campaigning on another level for this election. But where did that start for you?
It was, I guess, part of this process. I, in those 4 years working, doing this youth work, engaging young activists around the country, and across ideological lines, by the way, mind you, because we had in the National Youth Coalition people who are known to be have joined and been part of the DA, the Action SA, the EFFs, the ANCs of the world, but agreed that there needs to be a new vision and a new change. Rise came about because many South Africans felt that the trajectory we were going in was horrendous. All research was showing that the scenarios playing out in 10 to 15 to 30 years from now are all looking as bad as the next. And unless citizens, people who have led and who have capacity to lead, take up a new fight, we're not going to see much change. As I said, we're only like 10 months old, but a year before that, we were already in conversation with multiple people who said, what is it that needs to be done? And at the time, Rivonia Circle was doing a lot of work in building democracy and engaging communities. By the time November of the, it's 2022, they had convened this mass conference of civic movements, social movements, NGOs, businesses, academics, religious groups, all of the above, that said, we have to answer this question and we can't keep shirking away around the reality that a political alternative needs to be built.
And how do you guys deal with, for example, we just spoke about the egos, the people wanting to eat. How did, because it was a group of you guys who came together. How did you guys deal with all of that? Like the egos and, you know, people trying to, you know, gain self-interest from this.
The wonderful thing is that the people who came together were patriotic South Africans who believe that we need to put aside any kind of ego we have and say, what is it that we can collectively do to solve this? That's why I felt at home, because I said, people here genuinely want to build a new country that is equal, just, safe, and prosperous. And for us to do that, they reckon with the fact that you can't be, you know, the one who must be leading from the front all the time. You must take a role that you think you can best serve the broad populace of this country. So we managed it fairly easy because there wasn't much of it. That kind of politics didn't exist, because for years civil society had carried democracy. Mm-hmm. And people from there are the ones who are genuine about seeing a new future.
Mm.
So we didn't have much of that.
So RISE is mostly made up of civil society, basically, more than, you know, the politicians. Is RISE made out of that mostly?
Yeah, I mean, the very few people who've actually worked in formal politics for in RISE. Mm. I mean, the likes of Makashule Ghana was one of the founding members. Mm. He was probably the only one who had the longest experience being in mainstream politics.
Yeah.
For the rest of us, Songezo...
Your leader used to work here.
Yeah, exactly, you know, so we get flack for that. But Songezo worked here. He worked in different corporate settings, in business. Vuyiswa, same experience.
Mm.
In as much as we had links and you know, either family history or had done some volunteer work with political movements or parties before, majority of us don't come from them.
Mm.
And that's also what we are saying to society, is that we need a new culture that says the people who should lead us must emerge from within the people.
Do you think we're going into that direction of saying we're moving away from trusting politicians, but rather let civil society take over democracy? Do you think we're moving into that direction as a country? Do you think this, you know, the 14 million people who are not voting actually realizing that we now can, we actually put our trust in civil society more than politicians? Do you think we're moving there in our democracy?
The trust deficit on politicians is low, and it's primarily driven through years of neglect, distrust, because politicians will say one thing and then never deliver on it, and then come back and say something else and then never deliver on it. And
blue, I think, trains.
Get me there.
Yeah, anyway, the blue trains.
I don't know what's happening.
And the smart cities. Smart cities.
And that's the problem in our politics, is that they've created a culture that is so toxic that people can see through, and they assume that the ordinary citizen and voter doesn't see this behavior and can't, you know, reckon with these facts that exist. RISE has been saying, you know, no one is coming to save us. In order for us to turn the country around, it's going to take all of society. We ourselves must say, what are we going to do to solve this thing? Because we also believe that everything is political. You may not be in a party, but parties are inadvertently going to be invested in you, because everything about you, from when you wake up to when you sleep, is influenced by politics.
Even in your family, there's politics.
Even in your family, there's politics. Because politics is about power. It's about engagement between people, and so on and so on. I think we're seeing an emergence of a new wave of the type of leaders who are of a different caliber and different standard. And I think it will really bring a good energy into the space. I often challenge people, because many of us don't even know who's the MP or MPLs deployed to our constituencies. I ask this in almost all my gatherings. Maybe two people out of 50 put up their hands. And it's the problem with democracy today, is that it's not representative of the people. It's decided in a corner, and politicians go and do what they want and decide for us. We need to shift that around. And I want to sort of end with this point, is that the reality is you need to be able to hold your politician accountable. You need to know them. You need to understand what issues are they driving. Do they align with your values? The democracy model we have, I think, is starting to mature and forcing us to reckon with certain uncomfortable truths, in that the only way it works is if we make it work and we take ownership of it as the ordinary citizen of this country.
And how can we trust people who come from civil society? How do we know that there won't be another trust deficit in the next 30 years with the people that we trusted, you know, 30 years previously in 2024? How, you know, in 2034, what if you guys turn out to be the same politicians? Like, the trust deficit, how do I know it won't come? If we trust, for example, RISE Mzansi, whose leadership is filled with people who come from a background of civil society and actually doing community work, how do I know the trust deficit will be there in the next 30 years?
I want to say, I was debating this in the week with someone, that trust is earned. To build trust, you need to actually be a person who is authentic,
mm-hmm.
who is genuine,
mm-hmm.
who is an empathetic person, who cares for somebody's mm-hmm. interest and well-being mm-hmm. just as much as you think of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And for us as RISE, we've said the leadership collective we've put together are not just random people.
It's a diverse group of people.
There's a very yeah. diverse group of people who equally come with multiple experiences, who we've led before.
Mm-hmm.
And that leadership is built off trust that the people who we lead believe in us to carry out. I would not be here today if the youth that I was leading and engaging and the communities that I come from had not said, we want you to take the step because we believe you can make a difference in the parliamentary seat. If they didn't say that, I would not have the confidence to say, I should be there and I can actually make a difference. It was the constituencies I come from that said, we need to develop a new kind of politician who has done this work and help you get there. All of the leaders of RISE come with this experience and has built trust with their constituencies. And I think to continue doing that, we need to have a direct relation with the leaders we want to go serve in our interest at a parliamentary level and at a provincial level. And in 2 years' time, at a local level as well.
Level.
So again, trust is built, but the only way we can protect against us becoming what the current politicians are, is that if we build a relation and change the system to make sure that there's a greater form of accountability involved. Now, accountability is not going to come from somebody else. We can't outsource this to an institution alone. We as the people must take responsibility to say, look, Irfan, if we're going to vote for you and you get to parliament, we want you to be meeting us every quarter, reporting back on what is happening in parliament, what new legislation you're driving, what new issues you're helping with, what constituency work you're coming to do. If you keep doing that, we will support you. We may disagree and debate the different issues, but that's the level of accountability and engagement we want to see. And RISE is a big part of our emergence has said the democratic model has to change. Electoral democracy needs a more a mixed form that gives more accountability to the citizen. The people of this country need to be able to hold their officials accountable.
And speaking of the electorate, man, how do we get the 13, 14 million people who are not voting? Because that's one thing we hold so dearly within our democracy is that we have the privilege, I'm going to say, to go there every 4 years and cast our ballot, whether it be local, whether it be national. But how do we get voter turnout to go up, to increase? Because we can't be sitting with 13 million, 14 million people not voting. Imagine if all 26 million people went out and vote. Then that would be a highly contested election. As a young person, as a person involved in politics, as a member of RISE, how do we get those 14, 13 million to go out there and vote?
I think I also challenge this idea that young people are apathetic. To an extent, there is some degree of that truth. But the broad majority have not found that there's a legitimate alternative that they can believe in. And part of RISE, us building RISE, is trying to get that. But I always challenge, particularly those who are the biggest critiques on Twitter, or X, and on other platforms online, who critique without doing anything. And I challenge this notion because it's easy to be the ones, it's comfortable sitting on the outside behind a screen and shouting at those doing something. But unless you say, my responsibility is also to say, I know 20 people, I must make sure those 20 people are registered and are voted, are voting. And until we get to that level of engagement and honesty, we'll still see what we see today. The work must always lead us and guide us. The 4 years of me working at the Kathrada Foundation showed me that there are young people who don't understand democracy, who don't understand how the system works. And for us to organize power and influence the system, you need to do work. You need to organize people, speak to them, conscientize them, then mobilize them towards a particular objective. Now, in my case at the time, we were engaging in civic activism, trying to get a local library opened, trying to grow food gardens, etc. The youth I worked with from the first year, who were 17 at the time, some of them, are now in their 20s and are saying, by 2026, I want to contest for being a local councillor because I don't like what I see. And I actually want to serve my community because people are suffering. That's the same young person who initially told us, I don't care about politics. I don't like democracy. Democracy is not serving
us. It doesn't mean anything.
It means nothing. I'm still jobless. I don't...
Not in Swaro. Literally.
I got angry at the president saying this because I've worked with hundreds and thousands of young people who are saying that life in democracy is not what we were promised. And so that is the challenge, is for us to equally go and do work that helps transform the mindset that we have a role to play in society.
And just my next question would be, as an activist or a person part of a political party, you get someone to register to vote. Are you telling them to vote for RISE, or are you telling them, go vote because this is your democratic right?
So you'd find that there are some engagements that I don't even speak about RISE.
Yes, yes.
The recent one was last Saturday. There's a World Wetlands Day commemoration in my community, and I was asked to speak. And the one organizer said, no, I'm keen to hear about RISE. And I said, ethically, it's not a space for me to speak about it because I'm not here to speak about a party when we're focusing on a campaign being run by the community itself. And I lay those disclosures quite often, depending on the context and the opportunity to speak that I have. I've taken the decision to be a RISE leader. It is a choice I've made, but also there's a bigger responsibility to make sure democracy works for everyone. And when I go out, I encourage those to vote, to ideally vote for RISE because of what we have to say and offer. But even if they don't and they disagree with me, I say register to vote regardless, because your choice helps us determine the leaders for the next 5 years. And that's a choice you need to make to determine the type of person you think best suits you and what you think and who you think should take the country for.
You encourage people to go out there and vote rather than saying, hey, vote for RISE because I'm part of RISE.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think it's a problem in our current toxic politics that too many parties promote the idea that it's us or no one. And I think it's a very damaging thing to democracy to have a culture that doesn't create healthy contest and promote democracy as the ideal scenario we have to work towards. It's not perfect. Democracy is not perfect, but it takes hard work to get it to work for the people.
And I don't think I would let you go without asking you this question. This is my, before I go to my last question, you know, over the past week or so, since Saturday, you know, there's been this conversation, particularly on X, that's where literally people, it's a mess there. There's been this conversation after you guys disclosed, I don't know how much you can talk about this, but when you guys disclosed who your funders were, there was this big uproar from people saying that, okay, we're seeing an Oppenheimer's name in it, and this person donated 15 million. Did you guys expect the backlash after, you know, your national organizer went online and literally posted a whole statement and who your funders are? Did you guys expect this backlash to come from people?
Let me say yes from the beginning. But it's the exact point you made now. How much can I speak about it? I can speak about it
freely. Yeah, yeah.
Because the reason why we disclose is to be transparent about what is it that we are doing to fundraise. And the difficulty on democracy funding in general, it is quite expensive to do democracy work. We have teams within RISE who are working 8 days a week, not even seven, because day and night you're engaged, you can barely rest, you are in communities, you are doing various forms of projects, and everything from airtime to fuel to posters, everything, to t-shirts, costs a lot of money. And we need to ensure that if people want an alternative, it needs to be built. It's not going to come out of nowhere. And so the critique had been about Rebecca Oppenheimer funding us. And I was like, sure, what is the actual problem?
Do you think it was the name? Do you think if it was an opa from way, it wouldn't have been a problem? But now, because we have this name, it now becomes a problem.
I think that as you would see the discussion on X, that is part of the problem. And I challenged it. I also tweeted about the fact that we don't have a sustainable model in this country. People are also fearful to give money. For every 20 people we meet, one or two may only give us money. Others will send us on their way and say, look, we love what you're doing. Mm. It's transforming the country and communities, but sorry. Mm. So it is the name. However, Rebecca is a private citizen like you and me.
Yeah.
Have you even given a party money at all?
To be honest, yes, I have.
I'm
not
glad.
A lot of money.
But you gave something.
Yes, and I gave something.
And
yeah,
that
not
is
a
the
lot
exact
of money.
Thing you
yeah.
need to do is encourage everyone to say, if we agree on the vision, on the mission, and what is it that they've set out in the plan? I brought this out
manifesto,
because
yeah.
the manifesto speaks about our politics and who we are. And
that's what
speak.
I love about your pillars, where you speak about self before you go into community, before you go, you speak about the individual. I think it's one of your pillars in the manifesto.
Key pillars, yes.
Yeah, key pillars.
And
yeah.
those are things that are helping us determine what we do should we get into government.
Into government.
That is what leads us.
Mm.
And so we critique this funding question, and I recognize why people have anxieties about it.
Mm.
It's not an anxiety I have, because my work daily in communities is not determined by any funder.
Mm.
It's determined by the need for a new politics that serves the interest of the people.
Mm.
And that's what I do, and I'm comfortable doing it and continue to do it. We do encourage more private citizens of this country to continue contributing, because for us to actually see the change, to contest and create a healthy democracy, it needs to be funded.
Mm.
It needs to be resourced. And you may not want to give cash donations. Mm. You may want to give in-kind donations. Mm. That is also welcome.
And that's the thing about people. When we see 15 million, we think hardcore cash. But we don't know, we don't understand that 15 million can come in different ways, whereby it can come in a form of, you guys can get vehicles to be transported somewhere because you guys are traveling all over the country.
Mm.
I think that's one thing that people on X don't understand, you know?
Yeah.
And this was your guys' first, like, I don't want to say scandal, but first backlash. For me, it's seeing, like, you guys had to, like, explain yourselves so much, you know?
Yes and no. We've issued statements
in
that regard because we want to be transparent.
Yes,
we want
yes,
to
yes.
ensure that those who agree with our message and believe in who we are as leaders know where we stand. And that was why we did what we did. The backlash, I'm not too worried about how people receive it. We do take criticism, and we naturally must engage it because that's what democracy is about. But, you know, then you get, there's a whole other range of that critique that doesn't actually form as part of the criticism. It goes into the space of bullying and of tactics that are just meant to distract us.
Distract, yeah.
We are not in that business. You'd find we don't even engage it because there's a reality that we have to make sure 7 days a week we are engaged in communities and we are led by what people want us to do.
Mm.
The thousands of supporters who are signing up weekly are engaged in a transformative process to say we need to get a new type of leader into parliament, into legislatures.
Mm.
They are not asking us and going down this type of rabbit hole. We really, really, really need to have a shift in the way we see politics. And I'm happy to welcome many more South Africans who believe that this message resonates to donate to us because we are creating a new people-driven movement that is modern, that is hoping to achieve the type of freedom I think we were promised but has never crossed the barrier of promise. To build an equal, just, fair, prosperous, united, and safe country will take all of us. So if you can, 10 rand, 50 rand, 1,000 rand.
Hey, you campaigning now.
Please give it. I'm campaigning. Any opportunity.
You campaigning.
Any opportunity.
Just finally, man, is there hope for this democracy in the next 30 years? That's my final question.
There is hope. There's a lot of hope. it does seem like doom and gloom. But every day that I'm on the ground meeting a young, not a young Tinswalo, meeting a young person who said, you know what, despite all of the nonsense we see from the leaders who are meant to help us and change the way things work, we are the ones who are going to do something different. The young Bongani from Loli who is engaging his community on literacy programs, or the young Gugu who is based in Lehi, who is saying, I'm glad I fought for a library to be open, because now Matsidiso and Jacques can actually go and learn and engage the space. So there is hope. There's hope because it's being led by people on the ground. South Africans are engaged in solidarity like you can't believe. And why we led with the issue of hunger is because communities have said this is a problem. But it's not necessarily just us alone who are solving it. South Africans have been giving by our nature. How much we have, we still share.
All the time.
And so hope exists. What we do need to do, however, is transfer hope into action and start being honest about the failures of the last few administrations to deliver on their promise. If we actually have an objective engagement, we realize that they've not done what they're supposed to, and therefore for us to have more hope and to make sure we transfer hope into change and transformation, we need to change the leaders.
Will that hope happen on the 29th of May?
I think it will. I think it will. And I think we are going to expect a significant shift in a long-term process for change. And I'm happy that people are resonating and engaging democracy. Not just us, but I think across the board, you're seeing our initial slogan of 2024 is our 1994 is making more sense to people because they recognize that it's a pivotal moment to bring change.
There you have it. Is 2024 our 1994? We're yet to find out on the 29th of May. Ifran Mangera, I hope people that are awake, thank you so much, man, for joining
me. Absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.